Well, men, and welcome to episode 161, the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for September the 24th, 2017. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings. This is Bill Walthall, and in this podcast, we kick off our discussion of The Tempest with a jumbo, economy-sized plot synopsis, even though this is a relatively short play, plus we'll do an introduction. As The Tempest begins, we, as an audience, are not on the island that will be our setting for the rest of the play. Instead, Act 1, Scene 1 is set on a ship near the island. It is a chaotic scene, as we are in the midst of our titular storm. The sailors are attempting to keep each other from panicking. Not helping matters is that their royal passengers have come on deck to check on the situation. If we didn't know the importance of the passengers, a character named Gonzalo lets us know, as he tells the bosun, "Remember who thou hast aboard." Of course, at this point, we don't exactly know who Gonzalo is, nor Alonso, but we do get a sense of who, or at least what, Sebastian and Antonio are. They are jerks, insulting and cursing the sailors. On the other hand, Gonzalo has his head about him enough to make a joke or two. They don't translate too well today, as they link to concepts of the gallows and drowning, and he calls the sailor his brother. And as the scene ends, the only thing that seems clear is that the ship will be wrecked. The rest and last scene of Act 1, and it's a pretty hefty one at 500 plus lines, puts us on the island, where Miranda, a young woman, watches the storm out at sea, and we learn some very interesting bits of exposition when she tells her companion on the shore, "If by your part, my dearest father, you have put the wild waters in this roar, allay them." The pair are father and daughter, and given that all the other romance tragicomedies have had significant father-daughter pairings, Pericles Marina, Cymbeline Inogen, and Leontes Perdita, this should come as no surprise. What is surprising is her stated belief that her father can create storms. She fears for the ship and any souls that may have been on it. He assures her that no harm was done. Prospero doesn't deny that he had anything to do with the storm, and as he puts aside his magic robe, he then begins to tell her a long story of what he has never told her before. So it's a good thing we're here to hear it. It's her history. He tells her that they first came to the island when she was only 3 years old, and that this was 12 years ago. Before they were on the island, he had been the Duke of Milan and a prince of power. We learn that Prospero was betrayed by his own brother, Antonio, who took advantage of Prospero's study of his magical arts and neglect of his office, and, with the assistance of the King of Naples, usurped the power from Prospero. Father and daughter were taken and put aboard a small boat, a rotten carcass of a butt, not rigged, nor tackle, sail, nor mast. Luckily, before they were cast away, a noble Neapolitan, Gonzalo, provided the boat with garments, linens, food, and Prospero's beloved books. And if you think those names are coincidental to those of the opening scene, you really haven't read much Shakespeare, have you? And at this point, Prospero drops the mic on Miranda, telling her that fortune has brought all of these men, and more, to the shore of their island. But before she can ask any follow-up questions, and on the power of suggestion, magic, Miranda falls asleep. At this point, Prospero's servant, Ariel, arrives. It seems that it was this sprite who carried out the tempest for Prospero. Ariel goes on to describe what he has done. The sailors are still on their ship, in its hold as it's moored in the harbor. The royal passengers have been placed on the island in different locations and groups, except for the king's son, who is alone on the island. We learn that it is just after 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and Prospero has more for Ariel to accomplish within the next 4 hours. Ariel complains somewhat over the new work orders, as the sprite was under the impression that he would be set free today, lessening his term of service by a full year. And in the ensuing discussion, we learn even more history about the island. Once there had been a witch, Sycorax, who was banished from Algiers, But because she was with child, she was cast away and left on the island by sailors. Ariel had been her servant, but because Ariel was too delicate to act her earthly and abhorred commands, the witch imprisoned Ariel in a tree. After a dozen years, Sycorax died, and the sprite was left trapped in the tree, and at that point the island was only populated by the sprite as well as the witch's son, Caliban. Upon arrival, Prospero had released Ariel from the tree, and then had put both the sprite and Caliban into his own service. Prospero promises to release Ariel in 2 days if his commands are enacted. Ariel exits to do his job, and Prospero wakes Miranda, and one has to wonder if he's done this before. Father and daughter go to visit Caliban, who at first refuses to come out of his cave, but later does to insult the magician, who then threatens to have Caliban suffer pains and cramps this night. According to Caliban, this island is his because it belonged to his mother. The way he sees it, when Prospero arrived, after Caliban had shown him all the gifts that the island had to offer, Prospero enslaved him. Of course, this isn't exactly how Prospero remembers things. He says that he housed Caliban in his own cell until Caliban attempted to rape Miranda, violate the honor of my child. And Caliban doesn't exactly deny that. Miranda curses him, saying that he should have been nicer to her because she taught him language. And Caliban responds with one of the greatest lines from the play, or from the canon, that matter. You taught me language, and my profit on it is I know how to curse. Prospero then sends Caliban off to gather more firewood. He exits, and Ariel re-enters, only this time invisibly, leading Ferdinand, a handsome but heartbroken young man, as he thinks his father is dead, who has been led to this place by Ariel's music. Prospero points this young man out to Miranda, who is confused. Is this another sprite? No, he tells her, this is another man like them. She sees him as a thing divine. Prospero obviously approves of how this is going, as he tells Ariel in an aside that he will free him within 2 days for this. Ferdinand sees Miranda and thinks she's a goddess. When she says that she is but a maid, he is astounded she speaks his language, and then states that his tongue is the best of them that speak this speech. When Prospero asks what would happen if the king of Naples heard him, Ferdinand says that he is now Naples. So this is the son of the king of Naples. And we begin to see what Prospero's endgame is for this. Love between the daughter of the Duke of Milan and the son of the king of Naples. Of course, Prospero can't let this happen too easily. After all, we still have 4 more acts to the play, and he plays the role of obstacle himself. Miranda marvels at how ungently her father is speaking to this lovely young man. Both young people speak of their growing affection, and Prospero reiterates to Ariel that for bringing the two of them together, and for carrying out the remainder of the magician's commands, he will free the sprite within 2 days. And with this, the first act of The Tempest ends. Act 2 of The Tempest begins in another part of the island, where the main group of passengers have been placed. King Alonso, his brother Sebastian, Prospero's brother Antonio, the Duke of Milan, and the good Gonzalo. The king is disconsolate, thinking that his son is dead, and Gonzalo attempts to cheer him. As his attempts continue, Antonio and Sebastian's comments are as snarky and insulting as they were with the sailors. There is some body verbal humor here, but none of these are clowns. Gonzalo makes optimistic comments, but to no avail. In fact, Sebastian does more than insult Gonzalo. He blames Alonso for the presumed drowning of Ferdinand, who would have never died if the king had not allowed his daughter to marry an African. It is her wedding from which they are returning when wrecked by the storm. Gonzalo attempts to appeal to Sebastian's kindness to stop tormenting his own brother. When he fails, as a distraction, he goes on to describe a utopia he would create on this island if he was the ruler. In the Commonwealth, I would, by contraries, execute all things, for no kind of traffic would I admit. No names of magistrate. Letters would not be known. Riches, poverty, and use of service, none. Contract, succession, bound of land, tithe, vineyard, none. No use of metal, corn, or wine, or oil. No occupation, all men idle, all, and women too, but innocent, impure, no sovereignty. All things in common nature should produce, without sweat or endeavor, treason, felony, sword, pike, knife, gun, or need of any engine would I not have. But nature should bring forth of its own kind all foison, all abundance to feed my innocent people. I would with such perfection govern, sir, to excel the golden age. This is laughed off as well. Ariel plays music, putting all but the two jerks to sleep, and we learn that Antonio is more than a mere jerk. Upon questioning by the usurper of Milan, Sebastian admits that Ferdinand is most likely drowned. That heir is dead. And while the married daughter Claribel is next in line, she's so far away, which makes Sebastian next in line for the throne. Antonio then goes on to convince Sebastian to take the crown and usurp his own brother, by murder if necessary. Sebastian says he is willing to become king, but Antonio would need to do the killing. Antonio agrees, but says that as he kills the king, Sebastian needs to kill Gonzalo. Both men draw, and Ariel enters to wake the sleepers. The would-be killers explain their drawn weapons as protection from something bellowing like bulls or rather lions. This sounds reasonable, and the party moves on. The second scene of the act takes us to another part of the island, where we find Caliban gathering wood for Prospero, whom he curses as he works and describes the punishment Prospero has laid on the slave in the past. When he hears something coming, he believes it's a spirit of Prospero's, and so he lays down and covers himself with his cloak. Enter Trinculo. He uncovers a portion of Caliban and finds himself unable to describe it. Man or fish? Dead or alive? He then imagines taking this thing back to England and making money from selling chances to look at him. Thunder roars, and to protect himself, he dives under the cloak as well. And enter Stefano, a drunken shipwreckee. He sings, and seemingly poorly, as Caliban from beneath his cloak calls out, "Do not torment me." Stefano uncovers Caliban's head and immediately has a similar idea as Trinculo, presenting this monster to some king. When Caliban continues to plead for kindness, Stefano decides to give the beast a taste from his bottle. And as he does so, Trinculo recognizes the voice and reveals himself. They are thrilled not to be the only solo survivors, and Caliban sees in them fine things, a brave god and bears celestial liquor, and kneels to Stefano. Caliban promises to show Stefano all the island has to offer and leave Prospero's tyranny. Trinculo finds this ridiculous, to make a wonder of a poor drunkard, but the three leave together as the second act ends. The third act of The Tempest begins with Ferdinand, laboring to bring in logs as fuel for Prospero. The king's son is more than willing to do this labor if it means being near Miranda. Miranda enters, with her father watching from afar. She bemoans the labors her father has put this young man to and wants to help him. He chivalrously refuses, but asks her name. Of course, when Miranda tells him, she also exclaims, "Oh, my father, I have broke your hest to say so." Whoops. Compliments are exchanged, with Miranda recalling that even by talking to him, she has forgotten her father's orders, and Ferdinand reveals himself to be a prince. "Miranda, I do think a king I would not so." He wishes that his father was still alive, but even as a monarch, he is willing to be her patient logman. Exchanges of love, then promises of future marriage are made. When they leave, Prospero reveals that he cannot be as glad of this as they are, since they're surprised by it, and he says that he still has business to attend to. Act 3, Scene 2 takes us to another part of the island and the trio of Stefano, Trinculo, and Caliban. They are facing a crisis. They are running out of alcohol. It's a comic scene, a fool's scene full of puns and jokes. But when Ariel enters, the fools turn serious as Caliban tells his new masters that he is subject to a tyrant. Then, in a bit that is reminiscent of Puck and the Male Lovers in A Midsummer Night's Dream, Ariel speaks, and each of the men thinks that the other is speaking, and the sprite is able to spur discord between them. Between the confusion and the gags, Caliban reveals a plan to his masters. Brain Prospero, having first seized his books, batter his skull or cut his weasen with thy knife, and this done, Miranda will become their bed, something to lay and lie on. Caliban knows that Prospero naps in the afternoon and that they'll have their opportunity then. Ariel plays music, and Caliban warns the men not to worry, as The isle is full of noises, sounds, and sweet airs that give delight and hurt not. The men can only see a future with a kingdom for themselves, and are easily led by Ariel's music to parts unknown. The third and final scene of Act 3 returns us to the royal party, which is being slowed in its trek across the island. Like old Adam in As You Like It, Gonzalo is, at his age, not fit for travel. Alonso commiserates with the old lord and admits to weariness himself. Meanwhile, in a series of asides, Antonio and Sebastian reiterate their plans to rid themselves of these old men at the next advantage. Strange music begins, but instead of it being brought about by Ariel, it is Prospero himself who is controlling the music. And it's not just music. The stage directions call for even more. Enter several strange shapes, bringing in a banquet. They dance about it with gentle actions of salutations and, inviting the king, etc., to eat, they depart. Sebastian sees these shapes as a living drollery, one so real that both he and Antonio believe in greater myths. The shapes disappear but leave the food behind, which is perfect for the hungry men. But as they ready to feed, Ariel enters as a harpy and makes the banquet disappear. As if in explanation, Ariel tells the group that there are three men of sin who must be punished. He states that he has made them mad. When they draw their swords, Ariel makes those weapons feel too massy for their strengths, and then tells them of what they are accused. You three from Milan did supplant good Prospero. Remember how I told you about how Antonio received assistance from the King of Naples in the usurpation of Prospero? This is why there are three stated villains. With thunder, Ariel exits. The shapes reappear to take away the table. Prospero's watching, happy with Ariel's work, now that his enemies are in his power. And the magician leaves. Alonso, feeling guilt over his actions against Prosper, leaves with the rest of the party in tow. And thus ends Act 3 of The Tempest. The single scene Act 4 of The Tempest begins with the father, his daughter, and her love entering the scene, and Prospero apologizing for Ferdinand for possibly austerely punishing him, and states that he hopes the gift of his daughter to the young man in marriage will make amends. The father admits to having done this unkindness to test the young man, and says that she will outstrip all praise and make it halt behind her. No matter how much Prospero may boast of her, she will prove even greater, and to this Ferdinand has no doubt. Prospero warns the young man, however, that if he does break her virgin knot before all sanctimonious ceremonies, not only will their marriage be fruitless and barren, but sour-eyed disdain and discord shall bestrew the union of your bed with weeds so loathly that you shall hate it both. Yikes, Ferdinand promises. Interestingly, Miranda is silent through all of this. Interesting, but honestly, not that surprising. Anyway, Prospero calls for Ariel, who enters immediately. The magician tells the sprite to bring the other spirits, there are others, to this spot, but not until he calls for them. While Ariel does this, Prospero wants to bestow upon the eyes of this young couple some vanity of his magical art, because he had earlier promised them that he would. Not that we heard it. And he leaves. Prospero again warns Ferdinand, the young man assures. Prospero calls for Ariel, but who enters is Iris, goddess of the rainbow, who then praises Ceres, the goddess of agriculture and fertility. Ceres then enters, only it's Ariel in disguise. The two of them then speak glowingly of Juno, the queen of the gods, wife of Jupiter. Juno arrives to bless this twain that they may prosperous be. The show of the gods is for the benefit of the couple to be married. Ferdinand is amazed, and Prospero tells him that these are spirits that he has brought forth to enact his present fancies. And those fancies include a continuing mask with reapers and nymphs. But Prospero breaks off the mask as he remembers Caliban's conspiracy. He sends the spirits off abruptly. The happy couple is stunned by his passion and anger. And when Prospero sees their disturbance, he tries to calm them with one of the most famous speeches in all of Shakespeare. You do look, my son, in a moved sort, as if you were dismayed. Be cheerful, sir. Our revels now are ended. These are actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits and are melted into air, into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherits shall dissolve, and like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. Sir, I am vexed. Bear with my weakness. My old brain is troubled. Be not disturbed with my infirmity. If you please, retire into my cell, and there repose. A turn or two I'll walk to still my beating mind. The center of that speech is widely quoted and dissected, and we'll do the same as well later. But for now, he uses that speech to release the couple from the stage. He then calls forth Ariel. Ariel reports on how he has been toying with Caliban, Stefano, and Trinculo. He has drawn them through rough nature and left them in a filthy mantled pool. Prospero then has Ariel bring him his magic robe, think Harry Potter's invisibility cloak. And when he has it on, he and Ariel, invisible, watch Caliban and the men enter. Caliban tries to keep the others quiet as they near Prospero's cell. The men, however, are not happy with their progress thus far, stinking, losing their alcohol, and repeatedly calling him monster. As they reach the cell, the men become distracted by the clothes they find. Caliban tries to keep them focused. Do the murder first. But to no avail. All they want to do is steal the clothes. Prospero then watches as his spirits descend upon them in the shapes of hounds and hunters, driving them off. He says that they will be tormented by dry convulsions, aged cramps. And if you think he's only thinking of punishing these three, think again. At this power lies at my mercy all my enemies. Shortly shall my labors end. And with that slightly ominous statement, the penultimate act of The Tempest comes to an end. The relatively long single scene Act 5 of The Tempest takes us back to Prospero and Ariel, which is kind of interesting since we left the two of them at the end of Act 4. The magician states that his project gathers to a head. Ariel lets us know that according to their timeline, we're reaching the end, the sixth hour. The king and his party are unable to leave a lime grove and all are distracted. Ariel notes that Gonzalo is especially sad, so much so that he states, "Your charm so strongly works on him that if you now beheld them, your affections would become tender." Prospero notes that the rarer action is in virtue than in vengeance, and tells Ariel to bring them so that he can release them from his spell. Prospero, alone, delivers a kind of incantation to the spirits, even to nature of the island. He admits to use of magic, which he now says he will give up. "I'll break my staff, bury it certain fathoms in the earth, and deeper than did ever plummet sound, I'll drown my book." Ariel brings in the king's group, still charmed. Prospero cries when he sees Gonzalo, Prospero's true preserver, and the magician slowly releases them from his spell as he speaks to each, listing their sins and even forgiving his own brother. Prospero notes that these men still don't understand what's going on. He has Ariel fetch his own royal garments as Duke of Milan. As Prospero attires himself, he tells Ariel that he will miss the sprite and gives him orders to release the sailors from the ship's hold. Gonzalo sees Prospero as a vision of the island's torment, trouble, wonder, and amazement. Prospero reveals himself to the group. Alonso is unsure of what he is seeing, but he says that he has been held by a madness. Of course, what's unclear is if this madness was Prospero's spell of the last few hours, or that which made him assist Antonio in the usurpation of Prospero's powers 12 years ago. Regardless, he restores the dukedom to Prospero and begs the magician's pardon, and then questions how Prospero got to the island. Instead of answering, Prospero embraces his friend Gonzalo, who is still not sure if this is really happening. In an aside, Prospero tells Antonio and Sebastian that he could tell Alonso what they were planning to do, but for now, he will tell no tales. He tells Antonio that he forgives him, but that he wants his dukedom back. Alonso still wants to hear about how Prospero got to the island and how he is there to meet them. And then the king announces that he has lost his son in the storm. Prospero announces that he has lost his own daughter in the storm as well. Alonso bemoans, "Oh heavens, that they were living both in Naples, the king and queen there." And even the blind can see where this is going. Prospero says that his tale of how he got to the island can wait until later, and welcomes the party to his cell, which, when he opens it, reveals Ferdinand and Miranda playing chess. The king cries that if this is a vision of the island, he will lose his son twice, once in reality and once here. But the son is not a vision, and father and son are reunited. Miranda is astounded by seeing more men beyond just Ferdinand. Oh, wonder! How many goodly creatures are there here? How beauteous mankind is! Oh, brave new world that has such people in it! In what must be a laugh line, Prospero merely responds, "'Tis new to thee." Alonso greets his new daughter, and Gonzalo says that if it took Prospero being driven from Milan to make his heirs kings of Naples, it was worth it. And Ariel brings in the master and bosun, who deliver the news that not only is the boat safe, but it is tight and yarn and bravely rigged as when they first started their voyage. Prospero says that he will explain all, then tells Ariel to bring in Caliban and his confederates. And in they come with their stolen wardrobe. Caliban sees Prospero now as a fine master, but fears his chastisement. Sebastian and Antonio wonder if there's any way to market Caliban. Prospero tells the king that the three of them had plotted his own death. Alonso admits to having Trinculo and Stefano in his party, while Prospero directs Caliban to take the two back to his cell and put everything back in order. And Caliban seeks for grace. Prospero then tells the party that he will explain all, then go to Naples with them to see his daughter married, after which he will return to Milan, where every third thought shall be of his grave. The magician gives Ariel one final order. Be free, and fare thou well. In an epilogue, Prospero gives a kind of valedictory, bittersweet. Now my charms are all o'erthrown, and what strength I have's mine own, which is most faint. Now 'tis true I must be here confined by you, or sent to Naples. Let me not, since I've my dukedom got, and pardon the receiver, dwell in this bare island by your spell. But release me from my bands with the help of your good hands. Gentle breath of yours my sails must fill, or else my project fails, which was to please. Now I want spirits to enforce, art to enchant, and my ending is despair, unless I be relieved by prayer, which pierces so that it assaults mercy itself and frees all faults. As you from crimes would pardoned be, let your indulgence set me free. And with that, the tempest ends. Shakespeare fans, need a poster to hang in your room? Teachers, need some nifty handouts for your students to peruse as you introduce them to the Bard? Or are you just in the mood for some printable versions of some of the cool infographics found on this website? Well, regardless of how you answered those questions, I've got a scratch for that itch, a solution for that problem. Check out the Bill Shakespeare Project page on the Teachers Pay Teachers website. You can find character maps for Romeo and Juliet and Julius Caesar previewing the characters and their relationships to one another. I've also got geographical maps so your students can wrap their heads around travels within the plays Troilus and Cressida. Yes, even TNC gets some love. All's Well That Ends Well as well. See what I did there? Plus Pericles and Othello. There's also handouts on the so-called history in Macbeth and Julius Caesar, time in Romeo and Juliet, and violence in Titus Andronicus. Also, you'll find entire packets of handouts for both King Lear and Macbeth, including scene-by-scene timelines and the interactions as well as relationships between the characters. And I'll be adding even more soon. Plus, this is where you can find the printable version of the new and improved periodic table of Shakespeare. Some of these are for free, and some are for purchase, but all can be found on the Bill Shakespeare Project page on teacherspayteachers.com. Oh, and if you want to purchase a pre-printed poster-sized version of that periodic table, well then head on over to the Bill Shakespeare Project page on redbubble.com. Links to both of these sites can be found in the left-hand margin of this website. Ah, The Tempest. I've always had a soft spot in my heart for this play. I had one of my seminal Shakespearean moments with this play, as I've described in the blog. And between that one and the literally magical production from a couple of years back, co-directed by Teller of Penn & Teller, and you can catch a review of that one on the blog as well, this is a play that can hit it out of the park. Of course, in less skilled hands, the play can come off as stiff, as in that second scene history lesson Prospero gives Miranda, were cheesy, the spirit masks in the play, or with not a little creepy colonialism, O Caliban, O Caliban. After a first read-through, though, it turns out my memory is pretty spot-on. There's so much in the play that I like, and so little that drives me bonkers. And yes, I'm talking about some of those stiff, cheesy, and creepily colonial moments. As a valedictory for Shakespeare, the play works, especially that epilogue, and the more often than not overly interpreted Our Revels Now Have Ended speech. The main issue, as I see it so early in our process, is how do you stage the damn thing? I'm finding this is a recurring motif in the romances. I can only imagine what Shakespeare's own directors thought when he would deliver one of these late career tragicomedies to them. Oh God, how do we do this? Thank God he's retiring soon. So I figured to touch upon some of the dramaturgical questions, Ariel, Caliban, magic masks and the like, some speech breakdowns, probably a genre post or two. I don't know how much I'm going to talk about colonialism, post-colonial theory, but I might hit upon that. And there's probably a couple of father-daughter discussions lurking as well, but who knows? As I've mentioned before, I'm going to do a 3-month cycle on The Tempest. I've got a modern British literature class this term, and it looks like I'm going to get a long-term sub position, which is full-time for a month or so. And that'll be around November, and I have a ton of writing to do, journals and conference submissions, so this is probably going to get stretched out just a bit. So apologies in advance for stormy publishing, but we do have a tempest ahead. Now, if you've enjoyed this podcast, but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entry since our last regular podcast, and that was a long time ago, you've missed out on subjects including Happy Labor Day, My First Tempest, Act 1 Plot Synopsis, A Short Storm and a Long Story, YouTube Tempest Update, Who Wrote the Tempest?, Shakespeare Burlesque and the Blues, Theater Review Deja Vu The Tempest by South Coast Rep, Act 2 Plot Synopsis, Devils and Gods, The Tempest, Sources, We Don't Need No Stinking Sources, Friday Film Focus, Titus Andronicus by the Royal Shakespeare Company, Act 3 Plot Synopsis, Music and Shapes, Podcast 160, The Interview Special with Angie Hoban of Toil and Trouble Burlesque, Act 4 Plot Synopsis, A Mask for Lovers, Act 5 Plot Synopsis, Forgiveness and Release, Initial Stormy Thoughts, Friday Film Focus, Shakespeare Uncovered with Trevor Nunn, and Unity at the Beginning and End. So if you'd like more in-depth discussions or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or become a fan of our Facebook page and our Twitter feed. Remember that those social media outlets are more for Shakespeare news and notes than for discussions of our current play under study. Also, we've just started an Instagram account as well, so you might want to follow that. Also, if you have any question or comment about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. And join us again for our next podcast when we continue our discussion of The Tempest. We hope to see you then. You've been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for September the 24th, 2017. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. And we shall see thee anon.